Hey, welcome in. We'll talk Razorback baseball today. Bubba Carpenter in studio with me. I want to tell you that our baseball podcast is always brought to you by H&R Tire and Auto. They are a third-generation family-owned business serving Northwest Arkansas since 1976. Just like great baseball programs, H&R is built on consistency, trust, and doing things the right way. No shortcuts and no gimmicks at H&R Tire and Auto. Also brought to you by Eglin's Best. When it comes to the game day, you want the best in your lineup. That includes your eggs. Eglin's Best delivers more the nutrition you need with six times more vitamin D and 25% less saturated fat than ordinary eggs. You can score now with Eglin's Best. Better taste, better nutrition, better eggs. Visit eglinsbest.com for more information. Also brought to you by Southern Loft. They believe your home should reflect your unique personality. That's why they offer a wide variety of stylish furniture pieces that are perfect for any taste. Whether you're looking for a new sofa for the living room, a sleek dining table for your kitchen, they've got just what you need. When you're looking for that piece of furniture that reflects you, visit Southern Loft at 3155 North College Avenue in Fayetteville or call 479-856-6100. Arkansas beat Missouri 2 out of 3 over the weekend. That moved the Razorbacks to 29-16 overall, 11-10 in SEC play. They're going to play 5 games this week. They got Northwestern State Tuesday and Wednesday at Baumwalker Stadium. I will say weather permitting, because the Tuesday forecast looks a little iffy right now. We'll see if anything happens there. But then they've got Ole Miss coming in this weekend on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They play the next 8 games at home. And you look at the month of April, they've been gone for a good portion of the month of April, even going back to the last day of March when they went up to Springfield for the game against Missouri State. I know that the home, and I think some of this depends too on who they played at home, but I know the home games haven't gone great this year, especially in SEC play, but I have to believe that there's still an excitement of getting to sleep in your own bed, be home, play on your, you know, your home ballpark, dress in your home clubhouse, everything that's going to go into the next week and a half.
Yeah, I say all the time, baseball players are creatures of habit. I always liked being at home, sleeping in my own bed, eating the food that I'm used to eating, where you go on the road. Of course, they travel a little better than we used to back in the day, but there's something about on the road. I never slept good on the road. Mm-hmm. I never got comfortable. I never liked the pillow. I don't know why.
You ever travel with your own pillow now?
I do now.
I do now.
I do now. I don't go anywhere without my own pillow. Yeah. It's really pathetic.
No, I'm the same way.
What's the dude on Peanuts, Linus, that carries his blanket? That's me with my pillow.
I take my pillow and my bat. I tell you, so in 2022, I think it was. Yeah, it was 22. So, you know, Arkansas, you were there. Stillwater, Chapel Hill, Omaha. Yeah. I spent, I think, 20 out of 23 nights in a hotel. And I did not take my pillow for any of those. And Dr. Sense up here at the chiropractor office, he had to do a number on me whenever I got back, because it just, I didn't, you know, you sleep in hotel beds and the hotel pillows aren't very, and it, I take my pillow with me everywhere I go now.
Yeah, I'm the same way. If there's any way I can, I take it with me.
So. Yeah, you got to have your pillow. Yeah. So they'll get to sleep on their home pillow, even if they don't take it with them on the road. They'll get to use their pillow when they play. And I said next week and a half, it's really 2 weeks, because OU is going to be a Friday, Saturday, Sunday too. Arkansas, just one more road trip. They got left before the SEC tournament. They go to Kentucky to end the regular season in a few weeks. I think Missouri was disappointing in the fact that they did not play well on Saturday, game three. They didn't play great the first 2 days. I thought game two was the best game they put together, because you know they kind of got it was fourth inning lead, but they played with the lead pretty much the whole game.
Yeah.
Cole Gibler pitched real well for him. I thought Steele Eaves had a good game for him. Game one, somebody called it a miracle win on our message board, and I just didn't agree with that. I just felt like game one, after about the third or the fourth inning, you know, they're putting so much pressure on Missouri. They're getting base runners. They're not always getting them in, but they're getting base runners, whether it be hits, whether it be walks. It just kind of felt, with the way that Dietz was pitching and with who Arkansas had in the bullpen, that they were going to inevitably win that game. I never felt like they were going to lose that game. Even when they went into the seventh inning and they were down 3-1, I still felt like they've got a run in them right here to win the game. Game three, I thought that was the disappointing one, because you're playing a Missouri team. It's already a bullpen day for them. Their scheduled game three starter, he doesn't even pitch because he got put on the availability report Friday. Then the guy that they're going to start for him, He gets hurt, or I think he got hurt, basically an inning into the and a batter into the game. And so what's already a bullpen day for him, they're down the bullpen a little bit, and they got this guy who comes in, a Division II transfer, who really just shuts Arkansas down for five innings. And I thought that was disappointing, because I thought that, you know, when you look at where this team is, RPI-wise, SEC standings-wise, that was a game that I feel like really got away from them, that they're gonna I don't know if they'll regret it at the end of the year, but when you look back at the end of the year and you say, hey, what are the games that you wish would have gone differently? I think game three at South Carolina, game three at Missouri, game three at Auburn. Those are the ones that jump out to me.
Yeah, I think so. I was coaching, and I kept getting texts from people that were there saying that we looked flat, mm-hmm. we looked lethargic, mm-hmm. we didn't look into the game. It's disappointing the way the game started. You know, you look at the ground ball to Pompey. Mm-hmm. It should have been a double play ball. Now, that's a different kind of turf than we've played on.
Yep.
But as a third baseman with a runner at first, you know you got to step up on that ball if you're going to turn two. And it looked like the ball kind of played him.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like it kind of got caught in between and got that in-between hop and chested mm-hmm. it up. I think if we turn two right there, it's a totally different game. But honestly, what bothered me the most, Matt, was the second inning, the ball that Robinette dove for, and mm-hmm. Fisher didn't get over and cover the bag.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if he slipped or whatever or what happened, but he was late getting over to cover the bag. You have to be there. If he gets that out, mm-hmm. then I don't think the next pitch home run happens, or two pitches later, whatever it was. I think it was a 1-0 count when he got hit the home run. And I think there's a huge difference in – the first inning we could have gotten by with, just like we did on game one. But, yeah, I think that was disappointing to me that he didn't get over and cover the bag, and then next thing you know we're down 5-0.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with what you said. Even down 5-0, I thought, okay, we're basically facing their third best option for that day.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really good about it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like we're going to score a bunch of runs, and yeah, it just never happened. I feel like we hit some balls hard into the wind that just kind of got knocked down, but yeah, we just didn't put it together.
That's two times now in SEC play where a Division II pitcher transfers come in and shut them down. Remember, Florida had the guy, I think he actually pitched a couple of times and, mm-hmm. and had good success against Arkansas.
Well,
he was the D2 National Pitcher of the Year last year, but it's still – that I don't know that I've ever seen a year where I've seen two Division II transfers pitch against Arkansas, period. Now, maybe they have, and I've just been oblivious to it. But I've never seen a year where there have been two of them that have had success in multiple games.
Well, it just goes to show you don't have to throw 95 to be yep. successful. I mean, the guy pitched backwards – changed speeds, hit his spots. He was getting a little bit off the plate,
mm-hmm.
The outside corner, and how much off the plate, it was hard to tell. I don't know if you could tell or not. From what
generous.
I saw, it was a pretty generous strike zone.
It was a day three umpire.
Yeah, it was exactly. but we didn't make an adjustment.
Yeah.
You know, I do a thing with two strikes called up, up, and up. You widen up, scoot up, you choke up. And I tell my guys, don't get beat away. If the dude comes in, just do the best you can to fight mm-hmm. it off, but don't get beat away. And I felt like we got beat away a mm-hmm. few times, and, you know, it shouldn't happen. And like I said, the guy wasn't throwing hard, and then they brought that lefty in.
He looked good.
Villarreal? I mean, he's funky.
Yeah.
He's got a weird delivery. I think his fastball is probably 86, 87. I don't know if the SEC board was right. Didn't look like he was throwing hard, but he's kind of – different arm slot, kind mm-hmm. of a different look that we're mm-hmm. not used to seeing. So, yeah, he kind of kept us off balance.
Got a big, figure, I guess, if you will. Like looks like there could be a lot that could be built on with him.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah, just a different look. And, yeah, we didn't do well against him. Then I thought we had him on the ropes there. And then towards the end of the game, mm-hmm. that in the ninth inning, and then it just never happened.
I thought one of the biggest plays of the game was, and all of this kind of gets – lost in it being 6-1 and Pompey striking out with bases loaded and that. Kozel had a great swing to lead off the ninth inning.
Yeah.
Goes the other way and rocket. Line drive right at the shortstop. Yeah. They had him positioned perfectly. If he's, you know, 18 inches in either direction, that might be a leadoff hit. And then you've got the bases loaded with nobody out, and who knows how that game goes at that point.
The play of the game for me was the – Well, the one was the second inning.
Yeah.
Robin Fisher didn't get over. Another really important play in the game for me was Stewart getting thrown out at home plate.
What did you think about that? Because I asked Dave about it. I asked Dave about it afterward. I said, you know, I know that and you could see it. Like, that ball does not take that kind of – we saw this similar – I think it was when they played at Missouri. I don't know if it was I've got Cole Ramage pitching there in my head for some reason. So I don't know what year this was. But, like, where a ball bounced and it just took a really weird hop. And it ended up being a big play in whatever game that was. But, like, that turf has got – I go back to it. It's just bouncy. Yeah. It is. It's a different kind of turf than I think even Kentucky has. It's very unique to what they've got there at Missouri.
Well, in that situation, I tell my guy at third base, you got to be standing up. Mm-hmm. You have to know you can make it, or you don't go right there because you got Ruiz up. I felt like once again the guy was on the ropes. He was starting to lose it. He walked a batter before, hit a batter.
He had hit Rutenbar the pitch before, and then he threw a wild pitch in the first offering to Ruiz.
Yeah, so I felt like we had him, and then that happens. Who knows? You know, he bounced the first pitch. It's 1-0. You know, Booty starts to pucker up a little bit, and then you got Kojo, you got Helfer, you got the meat of our lineup coming up. That could have turned really quick right there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I like being aggressive on the bases, but I didn't like that move at all. And I know, you know, Dave kind of, you know, said, hey, it's just a bad bounce. Mm-hmm. And I get that. It was a bad bounce.
It's a weird bounce.
You can't let that happen in that situation.
It hit off the catcher's chest protector and bounced straight back to the mound.
Yeah.
If that's if that's grass, it doesn't do that.
Right.
Like that pitcher, I don't think makes that play. Number one, I don't think it ever takes that bounce. Number two, the pitcher doesn't make that play. And I know they go up there and they practice on the day before the series begins, and you play the games. Like, that was game three. That wasn't game one. But I just you can't even call it a dirt ball read there. Mm. We call it a dirt turf read. Yeah, I mean, it was – I just think a lot of that is you're so – unaccustomed to playing on that surface that you don't really know what's going to happen right there.
I love the fact that he read down angle out of the pitcher's hand. He knew it was going to be in the dirt, anticipated the pass ball, which is what you're supposed to do. I just think if it's a 1-0 game, that's a great move. If it's a 6-0 game in the fifth with the middle of your lineup up, with a pitcher that looks like he's starting to lose it on the mound, I didn't like it.
That was a big play in the game. Yeah. So they lose that game 6-1. I go back to, I just think they're going to feel like that game and game three against South Carolina especially got away just because of where they are in the standings.
Right.
It's kind of weird. You're also Missouri. I guess Missouri is down there. Have you seen, though, like LSU? They've lost 9 in a row in SEC play.
Yeah,
I was listening to their – I went on a walk yesterday afternoon for a little while, and I put in my earphones, and I was scrolling between baseball games. Like, I listened to the end of the Cardinals game, and it ended, and then I flipped over to the end of the Rangers game, and then I was like, well, I wonder what college games are on. Well, LSU's still going on. So I flipped on. I listened to the LSU broadcaster about the last two innings of that game, and it was so weird just to hear kind of the defeated nature of their announcers. Because I think they knew, hey, we know what's about to happen right here. Yeah. We're down to a good team at Mississippi State. You aren't coming back. The team, you know, hasn't won any. They've lost 9 in a row in the SEC. It's the first time they've ever lost 9 in a row in the SEC, and they're 6-15 now in SEC play, LSU is.
That's crazy, isn't it?
It's
from national championship to that.
But we've seen that so many times. Yeah. Like, and we talked about it, like Ole Miss did it and Mississippi State did it. I wonder if there's something there to both of those teams that happen in what I call the current era of baseball, you know, like the transfer portal era. I wonder if there's something, because we heard Arkansas's coaches talking about this last year too, how they were trying to balance the recruiting aspect of being there with actually preparing for the games and coaching the teams and practices and stuff like that. And, you know, I was on the first practice they had was at Cam Kozel's old high school. I think it was Millard South. And I remember being out there and seeing Nate Thompson on the phone walking around as practice was going on. And I think Dave even said something about it afterward. He's like, you know, hey, we're trying to balance a lot right here. LSU was in Omaha for even longer than Arkansas was. You know, I mean, like what a point, at what point were they able to bring players onto campus and, you know, show them around, like July? Yeah. I mean, I can see where that, I think there might be a little bit of a correlation there between longer stays in Omaha and not being able to put your full focus on the next year's roster. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think the fact now that we're talking about three national champions out of the last five this has happened to, I think there's something maybe there to that.
I think there's definitely something to it because I mean, kids want to visit the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Dave and his staff's in Omaha,
mm-hmm.
they can't come back here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who can they send back here to show a kid around the campus, portal guy that they really want, that wants to see the campus? It's kind of hard to do.
I don't know how you do it.
I mean, I don't know. Who would you send back?
I mean, but you like some deputy AD comes down from the Broyles Center?
I'd come back and show him, I guess. Phil can do without me. If that's what it takes, I'll come back and show a kid around. But it's I think there's definitely something to that because when the portal opens, and that's why the timing of the portal just sucks.
That's horrible.
Whoever
the portal and the draft.
Yeah.
Because it's a 1-2 with those two elements.
Yeah. Well, it's flip-flop. The portal should open later. The draft should be earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how hard is that? And I don't know who makes these decisions, but I'm sick of not having any common sense in anything that goes on.
The draft is made by Major League Baseball. They've got control of the draft. Mm-hmm. So they get to choose when the draft is going to be. They get to choose, you know, like who gets to be taken. You know, these rules, if you're in JUCO, 1 year, Division I, 3 years, the sophomore eligible part. Oh, that's Major League Baseball. And we talked about this last week, how Major League Baseball's got the CBA that's looming. Mm-hmm. And we think that there's going to be some changes to where the draft gets probably moved up and where the specifications about who can go in the draft, I think that probably changes. But the portal part, that is – like that's the institutions. They make those rules. And I don't feel like they're listening to their coaches – listen to their football coaches. You know, they got rid of the spring portal after all the football coaches cried about it last year and didn't have spring games. But I don't feel like they've listened to their baseball coaches in the same way.
Yeah, and I don't understand why doesn't Major League Baseball work with college baseball?
Why is Major League Baseball – here's what I don't understand about Major League Baseball. Why do they want their draft dovetailed with their All-Star game? I don't – like nobody has made that – there's nobody that has been programmed to the fact, like, oh, the All-Star game's coming up. I got to watch the draft tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you have the draft in whenever, even if you have the – I think even if you move the draft up 2 weeks, they tried this – remember they tried this in 2020? They were going to have the draft in Omaha the week of the College World Series, and then the season got shut down. I think that is a much better plan than to have the draft dovetailed with the All-Star game. Because, again, the All-Star game, that's a month out, maybe even a less than a month from whenever kids have got or players get to campus. And, you know, then you got the deadline even later than that.
Yeah.
I think even if you moved it up 2 or 3 weeks, it would be very beneficial to the college game, who you're depending on if you're Major League Baseball, to develop your players at a higher level now even than you used to 5 years ago because there's fewer minor league teams now. But it's also very beneficial, or it's more beneficial to the college game. And I don't think it's like a negative impact on Major League Baseball because, again, I don't think there's anybody that's just programmed to, it's All-Star Week, I got to watch the draft.
Well, it looks like it would benefit Major League Baseball too because these guys they're still hot. They're coming right out of their season, right into the draft, and then they go report.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I signed before the draft. So back in the day, there was a sandwich pick you could do before the draft started.
Mm-hmm.
They signed me before the draft and sent me straight, and I started playing games. You know, one day later, I'm playing games in pro ball. It's crazy, but it was. I don't think they have that pick anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just you're allowed one sandwich pick before the draft. If so, it worked out great for me. I mean, I don't understand why MLB doesn't work with college baseball more because where are kids what prepares a kid more for Major League Baseball? Let's just, I'm going to use SEC as an example. Mm-hmm. Playing in front of SEC crowds of 10,000, 11,000, or playing A ball with 1,000 people in the stands.
I mean, probably fewer resources available to them on the back end.
Yeah.
Not as good of a weightlifting facility, not as good of nutrition, probably not the same tools in terms of TrackMan. Maybe everybody's got TrackMan at this point, but like some of the motion capture cameras that they have in a lot of these facilities. I'm with you. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me. I would think that if you're Major League Baseball, you try to appease, especially these high-end college programs that are, you know, I mean, we're seeing players like they're getting on a fast track to Major League Baseball, or they're on the fastest track I think they've probably ever been, like the high-end players, to get to Major League Baseball. Skeens and Cruz and, I mean, the list goes on and on. I'm Wyatt Langford at with the Rangers, you know, it was less than a year. Jack Caglione, I mean, like there's a real, and a lot of them are coming from SEC schools. Garrett Crochet did this. Like, appease those guys. Help them out. Throw them a bone. 2 weeks is really not that big of a deal if you're Major League Baseball to move your draft up. Because, again, it used to be even earlier than the College World Series. It used to be, you know, it used to be real inconvenient because you would have – I remember one time Ole Miss had a player drafted as they were playing an elimination game in a regional. And they had the cameras on him. I think he might have been a first-round pick. And they had the cameras on him, and he was clearly getting word in the dugout that he had just been drafted.
Yeah.
As they're playing this game that's going to determine whether or not they get to play again next week. And the coaches hated that. I think going back to 2020, I would love to have seen what happened if they would have had the draft in Omaha as part of the College World Series, because I think it would have been very successful for everybody. And I think that's kind of the sweet spot from a timing perspective for college coaches.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'd be perfect. But once again, common sense needs to prevail, Matt. And
it doesn't happen too often.
We're not seeing it right now in college sports.
No, in a number of areas. A reminder, our baseball podcast is sponsored by H&R Tire and Auto. They're a local shop that's been family-owned for three generations. They've built their reputation on taking care of customers the right way. That kind of longevity doesn't happen by accident at H&R Tire and Auto. I thought for the first two games of the Missouri series, Arkansas didn't hit well pretty much the entire weekend. I think they might have had a 10-hit game in there, so maybe one out of the three. But what I saw for the first two games is like a lot of timely hitting, you know, like the two-out hit, the two-strike hit. Sometimes it's not a two-strike hit, Bubba. It might be that you're down 0-2 or 1-2, and you battle back and draw a walk. I think that happened with Nolan Souza right before Zach Stewart hit his home run. I know he was down in the count. He had two strikes, and he battled back, and he walked. I thought that that was key to the first 2 days, and then it disappeared on day three.
Yeah, you look at the fourth inning of game two, you know, Rutenbar got a single. Kojal hit a hanging slider out with two outs. At bats like that, and then you saw the Souza at bat where he did the same thing. Battle, draw, walk, next guy, you know, Stewart home run.
Yeah.
It goes back to, and I always say this, it goes back to Moneyball. Just get on base. Find a way to get on base. Mm-hmm. That's your job. Get on base. Get on base. Get on base. Whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought we had some pretty good at-bats. Some guys battled, but until game three. And then, you know, game three, it just felt like it wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was just a perfect storm of strike zone. A guy was pitching. He was on a roll. Whatever. Whatever happened, we just weren't there. But I thought the first 2 days, I say all the time, it's not what you hit, it's when you hit. Mm-hmm. I thought we had some real timely hits there. And I still say guys like look at New. New's hit some rockets that he's gotten robbed the wind more times. Him and Helfrich. I was looking at batting averages earlier, and I was going to go back and look. I know I did it last week. I was going to go back and look again at where we are. But look at – like, if you look at Ryder Helfrich, 278 in conference, that's a hard 278. Like, he's hit some rockets that have gotten caught, and I think Micah New has as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Micah New's hitting 217, but that's not representative of some of the balls he's hit.
Mm.
He's just had bad luck. When the wind's blowing in from right, he hits rockets to right. When it's blowing in from left, he hits bombs to left. You know, so it just seems like that. It seems like him and Helfrich have been the two that have really gotten robbed.
I think so. I was thinking about game three against Alabama. He had one that was knocked down and had one against Missouri. I think he might have had one, too, during the Florida series. Might have gotten him during that series. Helfrich is less about home runs. A lot of his has been just rockets up the middle where they've had guys that are positioned well.
Yeah, and then you look at Souza on the flip side of that. I love Nolan Souza. He's had a lot of infield hits.
His
I want to know what his time from home to first is.
It's quick.
It might be the fastest on the team. I know he's not the fastest guy, but his time from home to first is really good. He said a lot. When he hits ground ball left side, you better get rid of it or he's going to beat it out. And another person that's kind of had some tough luck has been Camden. Kojal's had some tough luck. He's lined out a lot also in SEC play. So you got some guys there that, you know, you look at the team average, 234 as a team. We don't have a single guy hitting over 300 in SEC play. Rutenbar's leading with 278. But I feel like we've been better than that, and we've taken advantages of the hits that we have gotten. And we've drawn walks. And I just think the stats don't really represent how good we've been. We haven't been great by no means, but we've been better than our stats show.
Kozel he's had a bunch of at bats here lately. As I was thinking about this, where he's gone the other way with two strikes because they're shifted on him.
Yeah,
and he's had a lot of success doing that. Like I think about one. It was against Georgia. He, you know, looked inside pitch, got the bat around, hugged it inside the third baseline. I think he might have had one of those against Missouri State the other night, and then he had that line drive against Missouri the other day. I think about how well he's been going to the other field.
Well, I was trying to figure out which game was it. Kojal's or Helfrich's at first base. 0-2 count. Helfrich stealing, and
first third,
and he slaps the ball to left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, didn't hit it hard, and then
I think it was Missouri State, wasn't it?
No, that was this weekend.
Was that this weekend?
Yeah, it was this weekend. I can't remember which game it was, though.
They all run together.
Actually, it was game two.
Okay.
Yeah, it was game two. And then New hits a double after that to right center.
Yep. Because Cam took the hard turnaround third and had to go back.
I thought he was hurt on that one. Yeah. Because it's tough to put on your brakes like that, especially on turf. When you go to slam, there's a lot of pressure.
Well, and he had hurt his ankle the night before sliding into third base.
Yeah, I was worried about that, too.
But it didn't look good at first.
But just that play right there, first of all, Helfrich's ability to go first to third there, the ball was hit right at the left fielder. It wasn't hit really hard. I didn't think the left fielder charged it. I don't think he anticipated Helfrich going first to third there. You know, I say all the time, as an outfielder, you stop that runner with your feet. You don't stop him with your arm. All he had to do is charge that ball hard, and Helfrich doesn't go first to third. But, you know, fortunately for us, he didn't. But Helfrich was flying right there. But I just thought it was a good piece of hitting by Camden. He saw an opening right there, pitch up and away, just smacked it to left. Looks easy.
Yeah, Helfrich, he's one of those that you think of whenever you talk about and you hear the coaches talk about having an athletic team. Like, it's not 1-9 the most athletic team they've had. But it is like there's about four or five guys, Helfrich, I think about, New, Ruiz, Souza, like there's a lot of athleticism, you know, in that group, at least. Maybe I'm missing somebody too, but like that first to third move, that's indicative of it. You don't see a catcher do that very often. Like how many catchers are you going to see going first to third on a ball that's hit to the, you know, the left side of the outfield?
Probably two. Probably Helfrich and Jackson from Georgia.
Mm. Yeah.
That dude's fast, too.
He's pretty good.
I mean, Helfrich just does a great job on the bases. I mean, he's fast, but he's a good base runner. I know fast guys that aren't good base runners. He's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Turns are good. Dirt ball reads. I mean, everything about him is good. So that was good to see.
I like how you're talking about putting the ball in play. I had a conversation with my son the other night at a game. He got really mad that one of his hits was just like a little dribbler. Like, I mean, he didn't get a good swing on it.
Yeah.
And he's like, Dad, that wasn't a good hit. I was like, but it was still a hit. Like, you just put the ball in play and see what happens. And the next time he comes up and hit it over the third baseman's head, and he's like, that was a good hit. But it's like both of them are, you know, they count the same.
Yeah. Well, so you look at it and identifying what a quality at bat is, you'll be amazed what players don't think a quality at bat is. So I keep a chart with my team.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the dugout. So after they're at bat, I don't do it for them. They go over and they write down quality at bat or not. They get a check mark or an X
mm-hmm.
if it's quality at bat. And then they put out beside it what it was. And I had a kid ground out to second yesterday. And wasn't the best swing. It was a two-strike swing, grounded out to second, put the ball in play, scored a run from third. He didn't give himself a quality at bat. He's like, well, you know, I swung at a bad pitch. Well, you had two strikes, you put the ball in play, and you scored the runner from third.
Mm-hmm.
It's quality at bat.
That's good.
And it's just funny what they don't know. But when you make them accountable for it,
mm-hmm.
like it's one thing if I go write it down for them, but mm-hmm. if they go write it down, they're like, oh, okay. And they start to understand it. Oh, this is what a quality at bat is. Mm-hmm. And I think it helps a lot.
It's like mutually beneficial. It's like it's good for you to see that they weren't happy with the result of that, but yeah. it's also good for them to see that, hey, even though you're disappointed with it, this isn't the worst thing that could happen.
Yeah. Well, they know I'm on them all the time about chasing pitches out of the zone. Mm. You know, it's something that I don't like. I'd like to say it's easy to swing at strikes, but sometimes it's not. I mean, sometimes the pitcher's going to beat you. But I want them to understand, you know, there's a good ground ball to second, and then there's a bad ground ball to second, and mm-hmm. understanding the difference in the two.
I thought Hunter Dietz looked really good on Thursday night.
Yeah.
Like, he gave up the two home runs, and you heard Kerrick Jackson say this during the broadcast. He said, and I think this is kind of where, you know, Kerrick and Matt Hobbs, they're really close. They go vacation together. They coach together at Missouri, really close friends. And he said something about, he said, we kind of know their tendencies. Mm-hmm. I think was kind of what he said. I think that those were the words that Kerrick Jackson said. And, you know, I think they knew that Arkansas was real aggressive fastball first pitch team. So that's what they were hunting. And they, you know, I mean, talk about the wind. They get a couple of balls up that one of them was hit pretty well. One of them was hit okay. You know, but both of them were wind aided and they got that big lead about four pitches into the game. But after that, Dietz was phenomenal. And he told me that, you know, he could tell they were cheating to his fastball.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he said after about the second or third inning on, he didn't start anybody with fastballs. It was mostly cutters.
Yeah, and I don't think either one of – I think Dave is the one that said neither one of them was hit. Like, one home run was hit 92 miles an hour.
One was 92, one was 99.
Yeah.
99, I think that would have been gone on a normal day. The 92, it barely got over the wall. I think it was about 378.
Yeah, that's pushing it right there. You need a little wind behind your back. But the scouting reports – so I was talking to one of the ESPN guys or SEC guys when they came in a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and he pulled out all the information that's available out there, and we know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's got access to it.
Everyone's got access to it, so they know what are you starting a hitter off with. What's your tendency 0-0? What's your tendency 1-0?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a long time ago when I spent 7 years in AAA, I liked fastballs. So if I'm facing a righty, a 1-0 count was almost always a changeup because you're facing veteran dudes in AAA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was the same. That was always a changeup. And you look at the tendencies. But you look at these guys, and we've got so much data on the pitcher that we're facing, but they have the same data on us. Mm-hmm. They know what Dietz is going to throw.
Mm-hmm.
And they were ready for it. But I like the fact that Helfrich made the adjustment, started going more first pitch cutters and then going late in the count with fastballs,
mm-hmm.
Kind of mixing things up a little bit, kind of like the starter for Mizzou did to us on game three. But, mm-hmm. I mean, that's making an adjustment right there. And I was listening to the game. I was at my facility Friday, and I was listening. I had the game on the radio, and I could have swore I heard Phil say 3-0. And I'm like, whoa, wait, stop. Yeah. So I was in the middle of a practice with a team, and I had to stop and figure out what was going on.
Yeah.
So I'm texting Phil trying to figure it out. But yeah, the thing I like, though, look at Hunter's composure. It didn't faze him.
Mm.
It didn't faze him at all. He knows he's good.
And that's where a pitcher can fall apart.
Yeah.
And I think in the first inning, didn't they have a play, too, where it was like a little infield hit? Yeah, the guy's called out at first, and they reviewed it, and he's safe.
Yeah.
I mean, like it, that could have gone – that could have spiraled south on a pitcher in a hurry.
Yeah, and he didn't let it – he didn't let it phase him.
I love his mentality. I love the composure and just the confidence that he has. It has – I had a long conversation with him back in – I want to say it was September. It was right around the time the fall ball was starting. And – there's just something different about him. That's, and I knew it then, and I knew he was going to be successful. I knew that if that arm could stay healthy, he was going to be successful because there was something different about him and his makeup and his character and personality than you see in a lot of these baseball players. And I think you see that playing itself out on the mound right now.
Yeah. Well, it's like he knows when to throw a strike and when to throw a strike or a ball that looks mm-hmm. like a strike. You know what I mean? He's mm-hmm. really good at that.
He's really in command of his pitches and yeah. what he wants to do with his pitches.
Well, didn't you ask Dave something, or did I read it? I know in the broadcast.
Asked a lot of questions. You'd have to.
They talked about his strike percentage. At one point,
yeah, no, he had
thrown it was, like some crazy amount of strikes.
His strike percentage on Thursday was 72.2%. It was 73 out of 101. Is that 72.2? I got to look this up now. It was 73 out of 101 pitches. If it was 100 pitches, I could tell you exactly what the percentage would be. But no, at one point, he had thrown 32 out of 35 pitches for strikes, and it was late in the game. And that, to me, I thought was kind of impressive. But then I had Greg Olson on the podcast on Friday, and he said, no, he said, actually, I think it's easier to throw strikes the later you are into your outing, I wish I was able to say right now why exactly that was, but he talked about it. I mean, and you know, Greg Olson, I mean, he had a great professional yeah. career, so I really trust what he's saying from a pitching perspective.
Well, and I think Dietz is one that gets better as the game goes on.
Yeah, he
I
is.
I think him and Cole Gibler both, they, yeah. you know, you get them by those first couple innings, their stuff gets better.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen it with Hunter several times.
What did you think about Gibler? Because I thought that was the best that he's looked this year.
I thought he looked really good. Thought he looked really good. And like I said, he got better. He got into one little jam. I want to say he walked two batters on four straight pitches.
It was a leadoff batter and the one out batter. Yeah. Four pitch yeah. ball. Or
and
four,
was able to, walk. Able to pitch out of that. Once again, he's not phased.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy you can look at. A lot of times when you're watching a guy on TV, you can tell. You can look at their facial expression, and they're mm-hmm. standing there, and you can see that things are starting to speed up on mm-hmm. them. They're starting to lose control. I don't see that with Hunter. I don't see it with Gibler. I think they both are just under control. They got confidence in their stuff. There's no fear there. You know, think of some of the situations Cole's come into the last couple of years.
Yeah.
He's had some tight situations, yeah, and I think at this point nothing phases him. I think he's getting better at being a starter.
I do too. I was going to say that because he looked more comfortable against Georgia than he did against Alabama, and then he looked more comfortable against Missouri than he did against Georgia. And that, you know, and I mean, you got this year that you're focusing on, but you look ahead to next year, that may be their Friday night guy.
Could be.
It yeah. depends on what they do in the portal, and you know if they have somebody that comes in. But you know, certainly I think there's an expectation next year that he's going to be, if not the Friday guy, then the number two pitcher. But certainly somebody that you're depending on to give you really strong outings in a starter role.
And I think what I like about him is I think there were a lot of times they were sitting slider, and he can spot that fastball up, even though slider's his best pitch. Mixing a few changeups. But, yeah, just like his composure on the mound.
And I liked his ability. So that inning you were talking about where he walked the two batters, that was in the fifth inning. Arkansas comes up at the top of the sixth, and they have a long inning. Mm-hmm. They scored some runs. Missouri made a couple of pitching changes. And I would venture to say that it was probably 20 to 30 minutes. Let's split the difference and say 25 before he came back out and pitched again. And so I'm wondering when he goes back out to pitch the sixth, his pitch count at that point was like at 77, I think. I'm wondering – hey, you know, I knew what the numbers were. I think the most pitches he'd ever thrown was 85. And so I'm sitting there thinking, I wonder how this is going to go. But he's able to get through that inning really, you know, with relative ease. And I think he may have even given up a single to lead off the inning. I think that might have been the inning. Was that the inning when they made the base running mistake where they went second to third and on a ball hit to short?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah. And so he got he got a little bit of a gift right there. But he got through that inning pretty easy. And 90 pitches, that's a career high for him. Six innings, that's a career high. But the fact that he pitched that well after having the shaky inning and being that deep into his pitch count, I thought was a really good sign for him.
Yeah, I think Dave said he went down and threw some in the bullpen.
He did, yeah.
Which is good.
So they got the bullpens on the field there at Missouri. They don't have traditional bullpens. It's the ones where you got to go have somebody standing behind you so you don't get hit in the back of the whatever.
Isn't that crazy?
Did you ever have to be that guy?
No. Fortunately, I didn't. Fortunately, I was always on the field, so I didn't have to be that guy.
I don't think that is. I don't think that's the only SEC place. I think LSU's got it for visitors. LSU, they used to have it. I think they had it for their home team too, but then they built some seats out, like some premium type seats, where they built. Have you ever seen their bullpen that they throw in now? It's underneath the bleachers in left field, but I mean, it is a tiny. I don't think they can have two guys up at once in their bullpen. It is tiny, tiny, at LSU. But yeah, it's the old school. George Cole Field, it was that way, right? Didn't they have the bullpens on the they have the bullpens in the foul ground at George Cole?
Yeah, they were in the foul grounds. You still had to have someone protecting you because there's just a small fence there. Mm-hmm. So you had to have someone protecting the pitcher, not the catcher.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone hooked one down the line, they could still hit the pitcher. So it was a long
time. I hate the bullpens. I think it's this way at LSU. I know it's this way at Auburn. There's some other ones I think that are this way too where you can't see what's going on in the bullpen.
Yeah,
I think bullpens should be transparent. You should be able to know who's up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or you could just say that's home field advantage.
It is.
You know, you look at – there's times that we have guys warm up inside, and then they'll come out and throw a few pitches on the outside mound.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I don't like being surprised by who comes out of the bullpen. It bothers me. It bothers me a lot.
On my list of things that bother me, that doesn't even make the –
Well, no, no. I'm not saying that it's number one, but it just if I'm mentioning things. So they got Northwestern State Tuesday and Wednesday. Ole Miss comes in this weekend. We don't know a whole lot about Northwestern State. I'll be honest. In 34 minutes from me recording this, I'm talking to Northwestern State's coach, so I'm going to know a lot more about the Demons here in the next hour, and I'll have something about them on our website at wholehogsports.com.
Did you not think about maybe scheduling that before we did this?
I tried, but, you're dependent on their schedule, too. Hey, I got to tell you, they're driving up from Natchitoches, and I think they're coming up 71. Like, not the greatest cell service in that area, right?
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, I was told we'll call you when we stop for lunch in Texarkana because cell service will be good there.
Yeah.
So, but we'll know more about them. I know this. That if you look at Southland right now, they're 16-11 in conference. The two leaders in the Southland are both 16-8. And what I'm assuming is that there's probably a weekend in there where teams play out of conference. Mm-hmm. And Northwestern State hasn't had theirs yet, and these other two teams have. So they're in contention to win the Southland, which is usually a pretty good baseball conference. And you think about some of the coaches that have come out of the Southland. Dave Van Horn came out of the Southland. Mike Bianco, who we're going to see this week. He came out of the Southland. Jim Wells, who was great at Alabama for years and years, he came out of, I think he was at Northwestern State many years ago. There have been plenty of coaches who have gone through that conference. And if you look at mid-major conferences who produce or that produce coaches who go on to have success at the higher levels, the Southland has got as good a track record maybe as anybody does. So the fact that they're leading the Southland, that stands out to me. The fact that they had a pretty good RPI going into the weekend. It got dinged a little bit this weekend. I think maybe something happened with a team that they had beaten earlier, and then they lost the game to SFA, hurt them a little bit. But they look like a team that could certainly be a four seed somewhere in a regional, I guess is where I'm going with this. And you got to play them twice with a pitching staff that we know that once you get past a certain point has been very shaky. Like somebody's going to have to step up this week from a pitching perspective and give them some innings on Tuesday and Wednesday, to be able to help them not stump their toe at home.
Yeah, I feel like Dave's circle of trust has shrank a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I want to say we threw 8 different pitchers this weekend. That's counting Dawson coming in and finishing out.
That sounds about right.
I think we threw eight pitchers. We need someone to step up. Someone needs to step up on it.
You need one of these freshmen like a Peyton Lee or a Mark Brissy or somebody like that who can step up. James DeCrimmer, we haven't heard a whole lot from him lately, but, you know, they bring him in here to potentially start. And I know it hasn't gone well for him. I know he's had an injury, too, that's affected him. Like, those type of guys who you've seen struggle in the midweek or maybe, you know, you put them in late in a blowout either way and on the weekend, those are the type of guys that are going to have to really pitch well for him.
Yeah, I think Brissy's the one that I'm really wanting to figure it out. You know, Jackson Kircher, you haven't
– That's another one.
You know, he's one that, boy, you would love – I just don't know if Dave trusts him or not because he's either – really good or really not good. And to get in Dave's circle of trust, I mean, you got to go out there and throw strikes. But I think Brissy's one that I've raved about him the whole year. I think he's going to be a really good one. I see him be a starter down the road. But you got to be more consistent.
He was really good against UAPB. And I talked to him after that game down in North Little Rock, and he was talking about hopefully this is the start of me turning the corner. And then he pitches against Georgia, and it didn't go well for him.
Well, you get into this point of the season, I don't think these guys are freshmen anymore. They've had the fall. They're this far into the spring season. They really don't seem like freshmen anymore. And I think some guys grow up faster than others. But, boy, Brissy's one that we really need. I mean, when we get into a regional, we're going to need a guy like that. Peyton Lee, I loved him in the fall and the spring watching him throw, and it just, you know, he just, there's too many pitches over the middle of the plate. You know, fastball's okay, pretty good fastball. I think he's a kid that's going to, once he puts on some weight, big 6'5" frame, he's going to be good. But we need him to be good now.
Yeah, and that's a hard ask.
Yeah,
it's a hard ask.
And DeKramer, I forget about DeKramer. I really do. I forget about him. You know, I know he had the calf injury. I don't know where he's at bullpen wise, how he's been throwing. But
it's been a while since we've seen him.
I think Cooper Dawson's starting to get himself back into the mix again. His fastball cutter combination. He's throwing that slider more. I love the slider that he's throwing to give him a different speed. You know, fastball cutter's all, you know, similar speed. You mix in that slider with a lot more depth. I think that's been good for him.
Tate McGuire didn't throw this weekend. We don't have the starting pitchers, but I would suspect that there's a pretty good chance that if he doesn't start Tuesday's game, which, again, he started, I think, two of the last three Tuesday games, that he would pitch significantly in that game. Colin Fisher, I think that this is the perfect opportunity for him to pitch in these midweek games. It's not going well for him in conference play, but we've seen him so many times in these Tuesday or Wednesday night games have success that maybe you lengthen him out a little bit in one of these midweek games. You know, we'll see. And then I'm just kind of looking through here. I mean, Ty Briscoe's one that, you know, we saw against UCA, pitched pretty well. Haven't seen him much since then. You know, Carson Brumbaugh continues to be brought along.
Why is it? Have you asked Matt about Briscoe?
About Briscoe, I have not.
I've watched him throw. I know he's been warming up. Like, he'll play catch.
I think he might have been warming up. I forget. I never checked to see who it was. But there were two guys who were warming up against UAPB, and then the game ends, and they didn't get to get him in. And I think there's a chance Briscoe might have been one of those. Because I remember Dave saying afterward, he said, and I should have followed up with him at the time, but he said, you know, we had a couple of freshmen down there, or a couple of young guys, I think is how he said it, warming up. So at least they knew we were thinking about them.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking Briscoe might have been one of those. But he pitched against UCA, was good for an inning. And then he pitched against Florida, and he wasn't good. It was a four-pitch walk in a left-on-left situation, and, like, that's what they brought him in for, and then, you know, he gets taken out. But I think there's a lot of potential there in his arm. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Briscoe, Brumbaugh, we mentioned Brissy and Lee. Cornelison is another one, yeah. And, you know, and then you got these guys who can recycle quickly. So I think Steele Eaves probably gets a little bit of an outing. Parker Coyle might get a little bit of an outing. Maybe McIlvain. But this double midweeks are hard.
Yeah.
And especially that Wednesday game, because you've got to balance the fact that you're turning around and playing an SEC opponent in 2 days. It's going to be very interesting to see how they handle this from a pitching standpoint.
So you think Tate on Tate McGuire on Tuesday, most likely, correct?
I don't have that confirmed, but that's my suspicion.
Yeah, I would think so. And then that leaves Wednesday, bullpen day. Maybe go with Peyton Lee.
Maybe you could start Colin Fisher. Yeah. I mean, because he pitched on Saturday. And
yeah.
I mean, the way he's been used on the weekends is that it's been toward the back end of the weekend. So it would give him time to rest right. up if you did need him, say, on Sunday.
That would make sense.
And so, yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're at a point where I think they're okay from an NCAA tournament perspective, as long as they, you know, continue to win. Like, don't get swept on the weekends. But you kind of want to, if you're Arkansas, you kind of want to make that resume stronger because, like we talked about, it gives you a, I don't know if easier is the right word, but it gives you maybe a less daunting regional that you've got to go into. And it helps your SEC tournament. I mean, you know, they're still in this conversation of, are they going to start SEC tournament on Friday? Are they going to start on Thursday? Maybe they start on Wednesday if things don't go real well the last few weeks. So all of those are you know, talking points, I guess, if you will, here for the final 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, and I think Tuesday and Wednesday, if we can get things going offensively and kind of carry into the weekend, it'll carry into the weekend. Plus, it'll take pressure off of some of these freshman pitchers to come in and do what we need them to do.
And we'll talk more about Ole Miss on Thursday, but they looked pretty good against Georgia. I mean, they were down 8-0, came back and beat them in game one, and then they lost to them in a 14-inning game in game two. They one of their best hitters was hitting, I think, 327 going into that day. He went 0-13 on Saturday. Wow. Like, there's bad days, and then there's that.
That is horrible.
0-13, and I think he had the last out of the 14th inning.
That's time for a slump buster right there. It's time to do something different.
My goodness. So that was a long day of baseball. Yeah. It was like 23 innings that people were there for Georgia Ole Miss on Saturday, and then they had to turn around and come back and play a game Sunday. So, like, that was a lot of baseball.
So what do you think we need to do? We got 9 SEC games left.
In terms of – I don't think they're hosting.
Is there any way we could host? I mean, I get it. Some people
really
would have to have
so.
A meltdown in
I
front
really
of us.
Don't think so. Okay. I mean, Chuck Barrett asked me this on his show the other day, and my answer at that point, and this is before they had played – or I think they had played the first Missouri game. My answer was, like, maybe if they go on a 15-game winning streak to end the season, maybe. But, again, you like let's say they finish the year with – let's say they went out and win the SEC tournament. Maybe they win – what would it be – 14 in a row at that point, you still got that Missouri Day 3 loss that's weighing you down.
Yeah.
You still got the Stetson losses and the UT Arlington and the South Carolina loss. Yeah. Like, I just think that I think that their resume is taking too big of a hit to be able to be one of the top 16. So now I think it's all about trying to build yourself into one of the strongest 2 seeds so that, let's say you're in that 17-20 range, you get to go to a regional hosted by somebody that's in the 13-16 range. And, oh, by the way, it's looking like in that 13-16 range right now, you might have Kansas, you might have Nebraska, so you don't have to travel so far. Right. Maybe they protect them and keep them a little bit closer to home. I think that's that. And then, you know, building your resume up to where when you get to the SEC tournament, you may only have to play 4 games, or you may only have to play 3 if things really break your way. Like those are the things I think that they need to be, you know, trying to build toward, as opposed to trying to be a regional host. Just win games. I mean, yeah. I think that's really what it boils down to.
Yeah.
But I think that people holding out this hope that Arkansas is going to be a regional host, I think will be very disappointed.
Yeah. I had hope going into the weekend because I thought we were going to sweep, and I thought, okay, if we sweep this weekend, there's a chance. And then my hope faded just a little bit. But, you know – the key is finish strong start playing your best baseball towards the end of the season. We've seen teams do it year in and year out. They scuffle a little bit.
There's always a team that does this.
And they get hot right at the end of the season. I still say this team's got the potential to get hot, and I wouldn't want to be in a regional with us, you know, at the end of the year.
Even if they were scuffling, I think that anybody that sees Arkansas as a 2 seed in their regional is like, I don't know if I like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see. One more time, we are brought to you by H&R at Tire and Auto, proudly family-owned since 1976. Trusted across Northwest Arkansas, committed to keeping you safe on the road all season long. You can learn more or schedule service at hnrtireandauto.com. Hope that you will subscribe to our podcast. We're on, We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Spotify. We're on YouTube. We're on our Whole Hog Sports social media channels, Facebook and Twitter. Hope that you'll subscribe to us so you won't miss any of our shows. We'll be back here in studio tomorrow. We'll talk about the spring football game with Tom Murphy. Bubba will be back in studio on Thursday to look back at Arkansas Northwestern State and look ahead to the weekend series with Ole Miss. Hope to see you then.